If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
no,
how
would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
This is The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times. Thanks once again for joining us, and we're right in the middle of what could be described as almost a classic Six Nations, one of the best and most compelling for ages, and my goodness, didn't rugby need it? It's been fantastic, and there are three great games on in the forthcoming weekend, which we're going to talk about. Top-level panel today, Will Kelleher. Did you ever play flanker, Will?
I did, yeah. I wanted to play flanker more than I did. Let's put it that way.
Okay. And so Will the flanker's here. Also, Sam Warburton was also a flanker, I believe, Sam.
Did you play flanker, Sam?
I had a go.
Yes, yeah, you had a decent go, actually, all over the world. And so Sam Warburton, Will Kelleher. We'll be joined later on by Alex Sanderson. One of the great things about last weekend, when there were no internationals, how fantastic some of the club rugby was. Sale and Saracens was an amazing game. So too, Bristol's home game, in which they played some of the best rugby that we've seen for ages. So we're going to speak to Sale Sharks director of rugby, Alex Saunderson, after Sale beat Saracens in the weekend. And of course, we look forward to the return of the Six Nations with Italy, Wales. Wow, what a shaky thing that might be for Wales. England, France, Scotland against Ireland. Can the Scots get up and beat or stop the Grand Slam charge? We'll also name our god or goddess of the week.
Before we kick off, I'm off air. There was two frustrated Spurs fans on this. Sam and Steve, are you reeling from the current state of Tottenham, or what's happening there?
Do you know what? It's just parallel universe. It doesn't conform to any other sport, any other behaviours or anything like that. You know, what Manchester United players felt when they were 7-0, that's what we feel almost every week.
This is forever. Yeah, forever we're going through, isn't it, Steve?
And it's forever, and it things never change. However much money they make on the stadium, the best stadium ever, it's still the same. And if they'll probably, almost certainly, I would say, thrash Milan on Wednesday, because that's a Spursy thing to do, and then they'll lose to Upper Risker or someone on the weekend. So,
Sam, have you been ever up on the roof? I was with Adam Hathaway, our friend and colleague, the dog man, who's been on the Ruck a few times yesterday, and he was saying how he was so fearful of going up and walking around the Cockerel a few years ago with his kids. Have you done that, Sam, at the new stadium?
You know, like kids' playgrounds, they often have those red rope climbing frames, you know, like a pyramid shape. I can't even get to the top of that. So I'd have no chance going onto the roof. They've asked me at the Principality, they do roof walks up there.
Oh, do they? I didn't know that.
Absolutely no way in hell would you catch me up there. So I'd love to go up and see the Cockerel that they brought across on White Hart Lane. But unfortunately, I went to London recently, actually, with my family just for the weekend. And I let them crack on around the London Eye, and I went off to Wagamama's on my own. I was like, there's no chance I'm going around the London Eye. So I'm not good at heights, no.
You're all right on the London Eye, though. This is quite contained, or is it just still get the knees going?
I'd be sweating. I'd be like a spider, just like sucked to the floor. I wouldn't be able to move, so I'm terrible with heights.
No wonder you weren't lifted in line that much, Sam.
We found his weakness, heights. We didn't know it at the time.
Also, the funny thing is, there's a really big rugby match coming up at White Hart Lanes very soon, in a few weeks. Between between Saracens and Harlequins, which is going to be absolutely massive.
Smith v Farrell.
And they've also
on the posters.
We've also got an underground racetrack that's going to be put in there.
Oh yeah.
We've got an American football pitch which slides in and out. It's an absolutely unbelievable place, except when the football club.
Yeah, I was going to say, you think you concentrate on the football for once, yeah.
Sam,
cheese room, there's a cheese room, pints that fill themselves.
Sam, we might be going from one agony to another here, but Italy-Wales, usually we kind of almost patronise Italy by saying, oh, look, they're coming on, lads, and you know you really fought hard. But are we now looking at a potential Italy win there?
I was very critical of Italy this time last year. And I actually put my hand up and apologised publicly to Italian fans when I was last covering a Six Nations game. But then this time last year, I think, England beat them 33-0. France and Ireland both put 50 points on them. So it wasn't a great Italy team this time last year. But then these are maybe the learnings that this side had to go through. And I wrote in my column with you guys last week that I actually looked at the average age of the team that played last week, or 2 weeks ago now, when this will go out, Italy's last game, their forward pack average age was 26 and a half years old. Their back line was 24 and a half. And there's only probably two players in that starting 15 who won't make the World Cup in 2027. So you're looking at Italy, as a coach, Kieran Crowley's thinking, I've got 90% of these boys now for the next two or three World Cup cycles. Then they lost to Georgia in the summer last year. Then they put Samoa to the sword. They beat Australia in the autumn. South Africa had a good win against them. But then Six Nations, they've kicked on again. I do think in the last 6 months in particular, they have been on an upward trajectory. And I'll get some disgruntled Italy fans going what do you think now? I'm like, brilliant. This is great for the game. This is what I wanted for the Six Nations. I thought they should have. I thought the talk about potentially getting rid of Italy was absolutely justified. And they went however many years, was it knocking on 10 years more than that, not winning a game. But now, they're justifying their position in the tournament. And it's great. And more importantly as well, they're not just being competitive. They're actually playing some really nice attacking rugby. So you guys might know, I haven't looked at the bookies. I actually never made a bet in my life. I don't actually understand the whole 5-2, 3-1 thing. But I imagine that they might have them down as marginal favourites, and that doesn't surprise me.
The bookies, Wales were just marginal favourites by about a point. But there's a really interesting odds last week. And that was the draw was 18-1, and I'm thinking, blimey!
You have to explain that. I have no idea what that means.
That means is that if you put on a pound, it's the draw. So in other words, what I'm saying is, Wales haven't got an awful lot of scoring power. Capuazzo is not playing for Italy, so I'm just thinking a draw. It will be very close, and you can get £18 for a pound if it is a draw.
Yeah,
that's my end of my William Hill thing for this. Same question as I asked Sam.
Yeah.
Is this a real danger for Wales?
Definitely.
Grave danger.
Definitely. And isn't it great? I mean, as you say, over the years, and sometimes rightly so, we've kind of patronised Italy and looked at their fixtures and gone, well, look, obviously they're not going to win, but type thing. And we had a small bit of it before the England game where we thought there could be a banana skin there and it didn't happen. But this time you think there's a real genuine chance that they could beat Wales. And that, as much as that would be sad for Wales fans to lose to them 2 years in a row, can't be bad for the tournament, that, can it? I mean, Sam, I was going to ask you, you were in the stadium commentating for BBC last year, that the end to that game in Cardiff, what are your memories of it? Like, heartbreaking for Wales, but that ridiculous try at the end, and Capuazzo going through Padovani and all that. What was that like being there?
Yeah, I mean, I find it quite easy to emotionally detach myself when I'm covering a game and just talk about it from a neutral perspective. So when I watched it, my first thought was what drama, great drama, great for Italy. You need something like that to happen to be the catalyst for something. And whether that was the catalyst for the Italians to have a bit more belief and confidence in themselves, then great. If I can kickstart their journey towards a better team, then brilliant. Not at Wales' expense. I would have rather not see that, but for the game, it's great. And I think Wales at that moment in time always needed a kick up the backside as well. A lot of people were saying that was always needed to happen. Wales were sort of treading water, and you felt, and since that, it's been so much has happened in Welsh rugby, and it's sort of, you know, the whole the cliche about the paper over the cracks has kind of, you know, been used a million and one times. But, you know, success at national level was papering over cracks. And ever since that defeat, it's really opened up a can of worms within Welsh rugby. So I think it's almost been a good thing because it had to get solved at some point. This, whatever's happening now in Welsh rugby, like, it was going to come to this bottleneck moment sooner rather than later. So I think that Italian defeat just sort of brought out the woodwork along with the Georgian defeat, probably a bit quicker than most people expected. But I thought it was great for the game. And I actually think, you said the bookies of Wales down as narrow winners. I thought the Italians might be favourites. But I actually think Wales will win because, you know, as a Welshman, like I was, you know, like New Zealand don't have that record on their CV, you know, like the top teams, England won't have that record on their CV, losing to an Italian side at home. Away, you know, okay, maybe, but never at home. And I think the Welsh players would be carrying a lot of hurt, and I would if I was still playing. You say you don't make games personal. Sometimes you do. And that this will be one game you do definitely make personal, and there'll be a lot of hurt from that defeat from last year. If I was playing, I'd be climbing at the walls in that dressing room to get out and try and rip into the Italians after what they did to us, you know, this time last year. So I think Wales will bounce back. You know, there'll be a lot of guys there who sort of experienced that, and I think they'll bounce back, and I think they'll actually win. But again, I wouldn't celebrate it because, no disrespect, to celebrate a win against Italy, that shows how far backwards you've got. You go there, you do the job, you win, you move on. You know, that's just got to be the mindset. But I do think Wales will have a reaction, and they'll definitely make it personal on the weekend.
So, Simon, you talked about that can of worms that's been opened and has gone all over the place in Wales over the last few weeks, which has been building for so long. And you've written a couple of fantastic columns about it that have got a whole load of traction. So where are we at with it, and where do you stand with it all? I mean, there's been brutal stories with Willis Halaholo over the weekend with his injury and talking about turning down contracts abroad, and now massively uncertain. You've got someone like Jared Evans probably leaving Cardiff and going to Quinns next year. Talks about players having to take 90% pay cuts to stay. Even talks of an Ospreys Ealing Trailfinders merger. I mean, as someone who's heart and soul's invested in Welsh rugby and whatever you've achieved with them, do you just sit here and almost in tears looking at the situation, just going, how the hell have we got to this?
I never wanted to be that ex-pro who was very vocal about certain things, because I'm not saying things for effect or just try and get attention. I've tried to keep it quite quiet and I button it over the past few years, but the reason I've said stuff is because I love Welsh rugby, and I love what it, not just given me, I love what it gives kids when I'm walking my dog, you know, on every weekend. I see the hundreds of kids on my local club running around the field, and just to see it sort of in disarray a bit, really, kind of, it does break me a bit, because it is our national sport and it brings together so many communities. So to see it sort of crumbling away and people losing that pride, like, really sort of hurts me, you know. Like, I sort of was that kid in a primary school, and I mean, we sing the national anthem and we try and belt it out so loud. Our teacher would be like, oh, let's sing it so loud the national team can hear us. So I would actually sing it so loud, thinking that there was a chance that 5 miles away, the national team could hear this little primary school in North Cardiff singing, you know, the national anthem as loud as they could. Like, it's just part of our DNA growing up. You know, you're all wearing red rugby shirts to school. It's fab. And to sort of see that now, sort of not at risk, you know, the game will always survive, I think. But to not be successful and not maybe have as much popularity as it has done, you know, it does hurt. And I was chatting to, spoke to my brother who's a physio at Cardiff, who, you know, yesterday, like, lads are considering getting a job as like a tradie and then playing semi-professional so they can top up those salaries by 15k, and they'll be earning more money than being a professional rugby player because they've got families they need to look after. It's not because they throw their toys at the pram, they can actually earn more money elsewhere. Do it. It's like, oh, this is crazy. So Willis is another example. You know, he would have been a good earner at Cardiff, rightly so. He's been a massively influential player and he's been a brilliant signing. And Willis has unfortunately got an injury. And now he's, you know, going to be out of, if he does accept a contract, he's got four young girls. He's going to have to either accept a contract, which is could be like 90% down on what he was on before, or he's going to now look at the logistics of relocating and getting four girls in different schools and nurseries and getting a house. And it's like, it's just a nightmare for these players. So you hear these stories, that they are real, you know.
Sam, I hope you weren't apologising there for your journalistic role, because no one thinks you're an old player who's interfering. In fact, a lot of people I know, including Will and myself, look forward to your columns and absolutely and have absolutely been riveted by them. I think they've been absolutely powerful.
Oh,
and
you,
and written for the right reasons. He comes off the bloody field. He does a journalism as well.
I was going to ask you, Sam. Like, it's a brutal question to ask, and if it's an unfair thing to ask you, then fob me off. But if you were in your playing days still, and this was all going around, and whatever status you had at that point, whether you were the 22-year-old or whether you were the 29-year-old, and still playing at Cardiff and a Wales player, what on earth do you do when they say to you, right? Your situation is this: you either take a massive pay cut to stay and the sort of honour of playing for the Wales jersey is still there, or you have to be selfish and you have to look after your family and you move abroad and you maybe sacrifice your Wales shirt if you haven't got more than 25 caps. That is, it's a hell of a situation, and you wouldn't be able to fault the players who do make that decision to leave. So I just wondered, like, what on earth would you do in the various shoes these players are in?
It's a very good question. I won't hide away from it. That's a really tricky one, because I think unless you're in that position, it's very difficult to know what to do. But I think, you know, if a player has got, you know, the reality is you've got a player who's probably in Wales living in a, you know, don't get me wrong, you have a nice living, probably living in a 500k house. He's probably got a mortgage of, you know, a couple, $2,000 or $3,000 a month, maybe, you know, quite an aggressive mortgage, because, you know, you have to have a short-term mortgage because you don't know you're not going to earn that money for 25 years. So mortgage companies don't give you, you know, long mortgages as a player because they don't know if you're going to pay it off in the long term. You've got kids in school. So if you're then on 150k and then you're told, right, you can only have 30k, and your wife's part-time, you're like, well, I can't pay my mortgage. I'm going to have to either downsize with my three kids into like a much smaller, much, much smaller house. Or you think, right, I'm going to relocate, earn similar money elsewhere and financially better off my family. And I would never, ever, I've seen these boys, you know, like Jared Evans in the press at Blues, who's Cardiff, sorry, who's been a, you know, great number 10 for us. I would not blame them in the slightest whatsoever. Like you can't, you have to, family comes first always, I think, you know, and that's the most important thing in life. So I'm sure players will make the decisions to put their family first. That's why I retired, because I put my family first. You know, I didn't want to keep earning good money. I was like, right, I'm happy to take a drop in my salary, but spend more time with my family and not put them first for a change. So yeah, you've always got to put family first. I think players will have to make decisions on what's best for them and their family.
Well spoken to you both, lads. Just one more word about the actual Wales team. They still have to go through the fixture with 15 starters. Sam, where does Warren go this week in your opinion? He's tried experience and he tried youth. Is it just pick the 15 form players this week or what?
I think if Gats picked 15 boys we thought was going to be the future of Wales and they lost, but he saw a lot of growth and it was a great bit of exposure for them, I think Welsh fans would be gutted. But I think that's actually probably the right thing to do for Wales are right now. Like, they're in this discovery phase of finding out. And Gats admitted it before the England game. I think it was Steve James, actually, one of our journalists, who said, you know, do you know, are you any closer to knowing your team yet? And he said, no. So he has to find that out. So I think it would be interesting. He went young forwards against Scotland. He went young backs against England with a mix of experience, of course. I would love to see now, when I say young forwards, young backs, there's obviously a sprinkling of experience throughout that, you know. So you're going to have your Ken Owens and Toby Faletau's in there, you know, whatever happens, you know, possibly like your Josh Adams. You know, so you've got like a lot of experienced players there who are, you know, Lions quality or have been Lions quality. But I would love to see the younger lads go. You know, I really think Joe Hawkins and Mason Grady could be an exciting combination moving forwards. And you've got two more games now in the Six Nations, three summer games. You've got four pool stages. So 1, 2, 5. You've got 9 more tests now. They got 9 tests until they get to a knockout stage. You need to know if can a Mason Grady start at 13 with Joe Hawkins at 12 in the cauldron of a Wales-England game. You don't want to be, you know the answer to that now, but you don't want to be asking that question if you're going into a quarterfinal and George North gets injured, for example, and a bunch of other senior players, and they're playing their first big knockouts, their first big game in a knockout stage of a World Cup. So I think going away to Italy, and that's like a World Cup, you've got to be, it's great to play at home when you have your home comforts, your team hotel, all these things, your chef, all those luxuries, nice luxuries you have. You know, can these boys then front up in adversity away from home, away from your home comfort? So that's why I think it would be a great place for the youngsters to go and play when the Italians will be smelling blood. Like I say, you still have some experienced boys there in the starting team and particularly on the bench even, you know, like the guys like Adam Wynne-Jones, you know, could even have a good case to start, but if not, certainly on the bench. So you have that sprinkling of experience there. But I think it's time just to give the youngsters a go now, and this is when we can find out if they've got the medal. And then there's another 8 tests after that until you get to the knockout stage of a World Cup. So plenty of time to find out what your best team is when you get to the business end of a World Cup.
Sure, and one way or another, guys, it's going to be not this afterthought in the championship. It's going to be an incredibly emotional game on many fronts in Rome. And there's also another emotional game, England and France at Twickenham. The France, until they were brought to their knees by Ireland, were World Cup favourites. Will, I'll start off with you and then see what Sam feels. There appears to be an eternal triangle forming of Farrell's, Ford and Smith. I don't think I've made any secret of the fact that I don't see Smith anywhere remotely near that triangle. I think it's Farrell and Ford are the men. And what people forget about Marcus Smith is he's a great runner, but far from a great kicker, an all tactician, all defender, in my point of view. But where are you going with, if you were Steve Borthwick, or if you were Will Kelleher, where are you going with your midfield?
Lucky I am Will Kelleher, isn't it?
Oh, you are.
I can answer for myself.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, go on.
Well, before I will answer that, but before I do, I think it's interesting maybe to take the listeners behind the veil a little bit, because I feel like this is a really fascinating week in the early stages of Steve Borthwick's England career. With us, I think, in the media, because essentially last week he said, look, Smith dropped from the squad from last week, and they set up a press conference to explain that and essentially said, look, he needs game time, he's a confidence player, he's the sort of guy that would thrive on a big game, literally the big game, playing for Quins against Exeter. We want to see him play well, and he's still in contention to play. And all of us who have been listening to Eddie Jones and other coaches before that go, when someone is dropped out of the squad, they're dropped from the squad. And whatever way they try and explain it, they're dropped from the squad. Like there's no way around it. Whereas Steve Borthwick's a different guy and has come in and talked about being authentic and having a lot of clarity. So I think the next few days are going to be really interesting, because if Smith genuinely does come back into the starting team, then we change our view of what dropped means, I think, perhaps. Whereas if he doesn't, then we look at what he said last week and say, OK, well, the wool was being pulled over our eyes. He was actually dropped, but you were just trying to push the headlines down to the next week. But that's not the voice that's coming out of the England camp. The voice coming out of them is he wasn't dropped. He was given a chance to go and play. Then Sam will know training time is sacrosanct, isn't it? I mean, and if you want your fly halves together, why would you leave one of them out of a training week in Brighton if he was going to then start or be on the bench the following week? So I think the one interesting thing, as well as all of that with this week, is I think that Steve Borthwick's era is going to be defined by how he manages Smith and other players like that. And that's always a challenge for an England coach, because you basically have so many players that you're going to have to drop and leave out loads of good ones. So the man management of Smith is going to be vital for him. How does he, if he does drop him and leave him out for a few tests, how does he keep him hungry and in a year or so in England? Because very quickly, Smith will start going, if I'm not in the team a lot, I could earn an absolute bucket in France or Japan or wherever
else.
Well,
he can go. Whoever's dropped has got the same.
Yeah, I know.
He's got
no
divine right to be anywhere.
No, but I'm not
He's
saying
He's certainly
it's
got no divine
Smith.
Right to be in the media as much as he is. Because at the moment, he is about a tenth of a player.
Well, that's
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I think he's quite a good player, isn't he?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
And do you know what? Well, I spoke to someone who's played with him this year in an international match. He said it's impossible. He gets the ball, he checks, then he goose steps, then he wants to come in somewhere else, then he wants to come in somewhere else. It's all him. Mm. It's all him. He's not part of a team, and that's someone who played right next to him.
All I mean is, I think whatever happens with Smith, it's going to be a big challenge for Borthwick to keep him on side, essentially, because he's going to need him at some point. So whether in the past England coaches have binned off the sort of maverick player, the talented guy who doesn't quite fit the game plan, and then lost them to the whole system, your Cipriani type character, for example. And actually, I don't think Smith is anything like Danny Cipriani off the field or in mindset or anything else, but I just think that's going to be a fascinating narrative over the next few years. But there you go.
France, Sam, where are we with them? We know they've got a lot of players out, significant players out, and they've coming three tight head props short. Who asked Bamba Antonio. It's a lot of players out and not quite themselves. I mean, is there any panic over there yet? Do you think Sean will be doing his nuts, or are they still pretty much on course?
Yeah, I do agree. Like, Gelange is a big one as well. He's like their hitter in defence. Like, he's their almost emotional barometer in D. Like, he's the one who's just like just smashing people, you know. And you can tell. Imagine Sean, just like, he's his guy. That Sean's like, right, you're the emotional sort of benchmark for the squad today, you know. Like, you know, and you can see the way he defends. The squad follow him, so him not being around, I think, is going to be a massive blow for France. And the game has changed, I think. Like, when Sean was with Wales, and he had his, like, one of his best Six Nations, I think he conceded 2 tries all campaign. And I looked at just a simple statistic. You know, France have conceded 9 tries already this campaign, which is unheard of almost for Sean. But I don't think it's anything negative on Sean. I think it's just how attacks have just evolved, and there's been so much more emphasis on attack, which Ireland have obviously spearheaded that. But I don't think France is showing the same ferocity in defence. Like, they used to compete relentlessly at every single breakdown. It was just, like, phenomenal just watching that defensive effort. And they still do that. There's been a lot of rule changes. Like, they're trying to speed up the game. And Will Rugby sent out some information recently that the average ball and play time has gone up by 3 minutes a game. Now, that sounds like nothing, but when it used to be 32 minutes, now it's 35. Well, that's almost like an extra sort of 8 to 10 minutes on the back of every game. So you're asking the French players, who are, people think France play quick tempo rugby. They don't. They just counterattack well, you know. Like, their league isn't a fast league. They used to play in probably 25, 30 minutes maximum ball in play time in France, and it can be a lot less. When Italy played France, it was 25 minutes. So those teams play a lower ball in play time. When Ireland played France, they got up to 45 minutes. Now, that's like playing a 110-minute game of rugby, you know? Like, it's massive. It's almost like one and a third games, you know? It's like almost an extra half of rugby, which I think France, maybe that's taken some time for them to adapt to, that the games are a bit quicker than they're used to at top 14, and teams are finding it makes it slightly easier to score against them because tempo in matches is going up. I just wonder whether that's one thing, because I'm trying to figure out what it is, but they are leaking more tries than normal. And that's the only rational thing I can really think of right now. As you say, like, Donty as well is, I think, a big loss.
Okay. Scotland-Ireland, at the start of the year, maybe we didn't think that would be very close. Now it's a lot closer than we thought. Sam, Ireland still going strong, playing, you know, extra minutes per game compared to France, etc. Are they in any danger with the Scotland revival up there?
I think there's danger. There's always going to be a danger playing Scotland, and Murrayfield feels a very different stadium to when I even used to play there, going back 5-6 years ago. There's a genuine sense of expectation now when you go to Murrayfield, and there's a lot more belief in their squad. And I do think that it'll be a tricky game for Ireland. I sort of said, I said on the record about 7-10 days ago after the last round of fixtures that I think Scotland could win. I think Ireland will win. I think Ireland will get an away win. But I think Scotland, like France, will show a lot of desire. They'll be very resilient, very tough team to beat. I just think Ireland have just got this. They've got this last 10%, which I don't think many, if any, other teams in World Rugby have got at the minute. They've just got this. And what proved it to me was, like, going away from home and losing the Gibson Park and the Tyke Furlong and these players and just seamlessly being so professional and getting the job done. And like, they've got this interchangeable ability that those who watch Leinster at Champions Cup level or in URC just have this relentless nature of turning up week after week. They can make as many changes as they want, but everyone just knows the system so well. It's just this beautifully well-oiled machine that they now have. I can't see many teams beating them. I can't see anyone beating them right now. And I think they will put in I think they'll win. I think Scotland will be really competitive at periods of the game, but I do think that the Ireland's class will come through. And you're seeing a genuine world-class World Cup winning contender here who could be a Northern Hemisphere team to finally rival the England 03 side that we haven't seen for 20 years from a Northern Hemisphere side. And I think Ireland are getting very, very close to that team now.
Well, Scotland have not heard of it in terms of the championship. Is that enough of a goad? And do they have enough in them to, A, stop Ireland's momentum and their pace, and B, to win the game?
I personally don't think they can. Well, of course they can win the game because red cards and everything else, but I don't think they will win the game. And again, it's a bit like the England-France one. If they were to beat Ireland, you suddenly go, well, this is not just a Scotland team who take little wins here and there. This is a Scotland team who are really seriously playing incredibly well and ticking off some massive marquee results. I think they've had an amazing tournament so far, and the last time they played, they did a whole piece about Finn Russell and whether he's the best 10 or not in the world, which would be a fascinating debate. And if Sexton's fit, it'd be a cool little challenge watching them play each other. But yeah, I mean, imagine that. I am the person who in the Times at the beginning of the tournament said that Scotland would lose every single game, which is just ridiculous. Right. Like, punditry is hard, isn't it, Sam? Come on.
I know.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't see Scotland winning, but this has been a Six Nations where we're being surprised every week, so we don't know. I really like to ask Sam though about Andy Farrell, because having worked with him on that 17 Lions, can you just talk to us a bit about how much of a, I don't know, because at that point he was a defence coach, wasn't it? So it's that kind of heart and soul thing, isn't it? But coming head coach is a bit different. But from what you know of him, what impresses you about the man?
No, I'm not just saying this now. And I said this way back when he had his first Six Nations campaign as head coach, and there were some doubters, probably from the Irish contingent, you know, with the press. And Andy Fowler is one of the single most impressive rugby men and coaches I've met. When I was on the two Lions tours with him, and he had this, he's got this, the one thing he's got from the players is the players will run through brick walls for him. People got so much respect for him because, you know, everything he's saying, he's done himself as a player. And you can't help but think, oh my God, he would have been amazing to play with, you know? And you want to earn his respect. And you almost see that with the Irish players. You want to earn his respect. And I was chatting to Paul O'Connell about him and talking about his leadership style. He's like, you know, leadership, he said, is how you make people feel. You know, so Andy Farrell's not this guy who's just barking at people, calling people out, making mistakes. He's making the squad genuinely believe and feel so good about themselves that they're world class, and filling them with so much confidence. You can see that the way they play for him. The players have so much respect for him. Definitely one of the best coaches I've had. Not surprised in the slightest that they're doing really well. I remember having a quick chat with him when I was doing a little bit of coaching with Wales. We played Ireland at the Aviva, and I was obviously chatting to him in the aftermatch function, and he was sort of asking how coaching was. I was like, man, I never expected to coach. I didn't expect to be here. And he said, no, neither did I. And I was like, Flip, that you're doing a pretty good job in it, considering that, you know, you didn't expect to be a coach. But it would have been a waste if he didn't, because he's got such, you know, he's such an influential character, such a likable person, inspirational person. You know, Ireland are benefiting from him massively now. You talk to any player about him or coach who's worked with him, no one's got anything but good things to say about him. So, yeah, I think he is, like, if the Lions are looking for a coach, I think he's just an absolute shoe-in.
Well, just one thing, Sam's coaching stint with Wales, was that the start of the decline?
Brutal. Oh, I think I'll defer that one to our friend and colleague.
Okay. We'll put a poll out there, see what happens.
Just very, very quickly, one other little small item. We're going to turn to the Gallagher Premiership. It was vintage weekend for the tournament, battered and bruised though it is. And we're going to be joined by Sail Sharks Director Rugby, Alex Sanderson.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, as promised, we're joined by Alex Sanderson, who I guess, along with Pat Lam, are the coaching gods of the week.
Yeah.
After their two brilliant performances. Alex, thanks for joining us. And I don't know whether you didn't look a very excitable sort of guy on the TV after during the game, but you must have been thrilled by the way the guys played and also by what it meant for the club, because it seemed to be a huge and really partisan crowd, which is just what you would have wanted.
Yes, you want it to be a bit of a cauldron, don't you? A bit of a horrible place to come up north, and it has been in the past, and I think we're getting there again. I was emotional, I was excited. I just screamed into my hoodie away from the cameras. So I managed to keep it off the screens, because you have to keep at least the illusion of composure, don't you, as a DOR? But it meant a lot. I was asked a few times, because it's, you know, the old team, and it wasn't that. It wasn't the fact that I got one over my old mates, or that it's now 3-1 in the series. Not that I'm counting. it's what it meant to the club with the Northern Rugby Matters. It's having a full house and getting that support and rewarding that support. It's the way the lads turn themselves around. And Sam, you'll know this. It's a bit easier at half time when you've got the benefit of clips on the computer. You have a bit of a breath and you're able to recalibrate. But the harder task is getting a team on their own merits, on the back of their own instruction, to turn themselves around, to take control of a game, to shift the momentum, which they did 25 minutes in. So that's the thing that I was most impressed and most happy about from the weekend.
Alex, how are you viewing this Premiership? I mean, you and Sarri's are clearer than others ahead of the pack, but just seems an absolutely crazy scene where everyone's winning games, pushing themselves into the middle. You've got Bristol putting 60 points on Northampton on Friday night, and now they're ninth, but only seven points off the playoffs. It's a crazy old season, isn't it?
It is, and the better for it. Obviously, the competition is high. It shows the calibre of coaching and the teams that are in the competition, and we spoke about it today. Like, if you're just slightly off it, you get beat. You know, we've had a couple of bruising encounters, Northampton being one and Exeter being the other in the last 3 weeks, both of whom suffered some pretty big defeats at the weekend. It's the relentlessness of the competition as well that you've got to deal with. You're able to flex and manage the training load in the week, so they've still got some energy beans in them when they come to the weekend.
Sam, just before Alex came on, you were talking about belonging and how it's difficult sometimes when you're to belong to a region, if you're in Newport or Cardiff or Swansea. Do you think we've lost in Wales that sense of belonging which Alex is talking about now, and which if you play for Leicester or Gloucester, you do feel that you belong to something?
That's one thing that shines through when I watch Sale and yourself, Alex, is I've covered Sale a bit in Europe. What I love about Sale is that I think they can hit a physical and emotional peak, which I think a lot of other clubs can't match on a lot of occasions. And that seems like it comes from yourself to start with. And I'm not just saying it, you seem like a coach. I look at yourself and you speak really passionately about Sale. I'm like, oh, I'd love to play for Alex. You know, like, you really get that. And it feels like the players, you don't ask them that to do anything that you wouldn't do yourself, and it shines through that you really care for the club as well. And I think when you've got someone who's at the top of the tree who emulates that as a player, it's really easy just to buy in. And I don't know if you consciously think about that, Alex, but it seems like you have got, you know, wherever you go, the players really buy in and you care a heck of a lot about the club you're at. And I could only wish that we had that same sort of emotion and passion, you know, behind some of the clubs that we're at, you know, because it gives players a real good sense of belonging, I think.
Well, thanks, Sam. Firstly, thanks for the compliment. You know, if you ever get the urge to put the boots back on, even if it's for a Vets game.
The Kerry boys would batter me now.
It's not intentional. It's hardwired in me to look after the players and love the place that you work and have fun, you know, while you're doing it. I think that's the important thing. You've been in teams that have won Grand Slams, Sam, you know, you understand that the fleeting moment and exhilaration of lifting that trophy is just that, but it's enjoying, you know, almost like the process of rolling and pushing the rock up the hill. If you can enjoy that repetitive hamster wheel of work, then you kind of cracked it. So it's more the day-to-day here that we look to make every day really, really important. Obviously, every weekend special, but yeah, the passion I can't take credit for that. Like, I can lead by example as I try to every day and ask certain things of them. Then it's only ever going to be kind of extrinsic motivation. What we're trying to do, what we saw at the weekend, is for them to drive each other. That's true altruism, that, isn't it? When you're putting yourself and your body for the sake of somebody else, you tend to get more out of yourself. In fact, it's proven physiologically, you're able to get more out of yourself if it's for somebody else. So once you kind of create that environment, that's when special things start happening.
Alex, I'd love to ask you about a couple of players. The first one is George Ford, who we touched upon earlier. Just how influential has he been off the field? We've had a few conversations with guys at Sale about the way he's helped in attack meetings and all that sort of thing, but you've known him for a while, but bringing him up north, bringing him back home has been a big thing for him, hasn't it? And can you just talk to us about what he's been like around the place, and now you've actually got him on the field, how he's contributing to that too?
He was definitely someone who sparked our belief at the start of the season. A lot of what I ask and demand comes by way of the things that I felt were important as a player and I do as a coach: work rate, defence, you know, all that kind of, all the stuff that requires no talent, Sam. You know, you've heard that expression before. It's a well-used Alwyn Jones expression. Whereas George, because of his rugby intellect, was able to come from an outside perspective, from that Leicester environment, and talk to the boys honestly about how close we were. Like, we're this far off, and for the backs to back themselves a bit more and not just to fall back into a default of contingency, and, you know, not just to fall back into the probables as over the possibles, but when it's on, it's truly on. Let's have a go and back yourselves. And as a result, what we're doing with the ball is far better this year in terms of our variation, but ultimately just scoring tries. Like, I don't think we're that far off Saris, if not kind of level pegging with them. And
exactly the same, yeah, 59 each.
There you go. That's a decent start. I know a few more of ours have been through the mall, but thank God for rugby union, eh? Otherwise, it'd just be rugby league.
And you've actually conceded fewer by 2, 41-43. Well,
they're good stats then, aren't they? Over time, stats tend to prove themselves.
I was going to ask you, because obviously you spent years working with Owen Farrell too, and our perception from the outside is that they're sort of two halves of the same rugby brain, him and George Ford, because they've known each other since they were kids and grown up together and have that kind of telepathic relationship and all that. But are they actually quite different, or is that about right, do you think, Alex?
I think they're very much on the same page in terms of how they view the game. What both of them do with the ball, they'd be quite well aligned. How they go about communicating that is vastly different.
Yeah.
Not to say that one's better than the other. Like, Owen as a catalyst, what do they call him? Deviant. He's someone who asks why, what for, and how can we do it better? And even if you circle around,
challenger, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's sometimes I'll challenge you for the sake of challenging it, you know. But that brought me on as a coach, definitely, without a shadow of a doubt. And now I've been a little bit more long in the tooth, I guess. It was nice to have someone who I could just have a cup of coffee with and converse about rugby matters as opposed to fronting up against. But I think it's important, like, the best players do challenge you, should challenge you.
The other guy I was going to ask you about too is Manu, obviously, who's banned at the moment. But what's the latest with him? Because I think his contract's out at the end of the season. Are you desperate to keep him? What can you tell us about the ins and outs of that situation? It might be tricky too.
We are desperate to keep him. Like any club, we've just been hamstrung by the salary cap and the need to get a robust centre that can function for us over the course of the season, that's got some growth in him as well, you know. Got some growth in that can grow with his squad, because, you know, the average age of our squad's going to be like 24, 25 maybe. We've got 5 or 6 years in him. So that's been a priority, what's best for the squad, and then, you know, what's best for Manu and what we want, what we desire at times is in contrast to what's best for the team long term. That's what we're wrestling with, but we have found some money and we're still in conversation with them.
Okay,
Alex, just finally, you know, keep you too long, otherwise it'll be the next fixture coming up, but you, I remember a previous owner of Sale said one of his visions was that the Northwest is such a populous place and there are no big teams that close, that his vision was, as well as bringing people in, but to provide rugby for almost local guys. Now, I've seen one or two people come into the team this year, like your scrum half on the weekend, a fullback. I mean, that progression from the academy or from the locality seems to be working quite beautifully for you at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, and we've invested more heavily in that area over the last 2 years than we ever have. I think part of it, you know, like if we're looking at the perfect kind of storm that's aided it, part of it was COVID, part of it was the necessity to make the Premiership sustainable as businesses. Part of it was my understanding and belief that it's teams that stay together that win together. It's teams that are cohesive and stay together over time that win together. You know, and on the back of all of that, you've got a vast catchment area. And I say the Northwest, but, you know, we're dipping our toe into North Wales as well and into Yorkshire, because they're all areas which are closer to Sale than most of the clubs, you know, barring Newcastle. And it provides a pathway for young lads to get into top rugby, where they still have the support base of the families and the friends. They're not going too far away. And that's really important for young lads from 18 through to 22 to be able to call the dad up after a game or go and see their mum and get the washing done. All of that's important, you know, for their continued development until they start peaking maybe 23, 24. The academy, as much, and I think there was 13 out of 23 who were all academy lads at the weekend, and some of those, you know, had man of the match performances. It's only going to get bigger. That's the promise. Like, it's only going to get, we're not going to invest more, and there's going to be more of those lads from the north playing in a Sale shirt.
What a vision that would be. Alex, congratulations on all that's happened so far this season, and thank you for joining us. And it was absolute joyous to watch it yesterday, and to think that it was on ITV's national coverage, not just not just a small audience. It was just a great day for yourselves, a great day for rugby too. So, Alex Anderson, best of luck for the rest of the season, and thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks for your time. Sorry I talked so much. You get a word in there, Sam, did you?
I just need to listen.
Well, maybe next time. You need to have some kind of cue just to shut me up.
Oh, no, you're the main man.
All right, stop it. All right.
Okay, it's time for God or Goddess or Devil of the Week. We're going to come to Sam Warburton first. Sam, God or Goddess?
Yeah, God. I'm going to be a little bit Welsh-centric, sorry, and given it's not a Six Nations weekend just gone, I'm going to look at some of the club games. But as obviously a Cardiff boy and a Cardiff fan, they had their last home game on Saturday against Ulster. Now, they lost, but Ray Lilo, who I think has been one of Cardiff and Welsh, out of the Welsh regions, one of their best signings over the last decade. He's been a phenomenal player for Cardiff. He had two unbelievable assists, two amazing offloads, which any centre in world rugby would be proud of. And it was the last time that the Arms Park crowd are probably going to see Ray Lilo. And he's had an incredible centre partnership with Willis Halaholo. And we're not going to see them again, it's unlikely, you know, with all the sort of budget cuts and things like that. So, I did urge anyone just to look at the Cardiff rugby socials, which they put out is two sort of try assists, which are outrageous. They were world-class sort of assists to create two tries for Cardiff. And it's the last time we're going to see Ray Lilo, but been a phenomenal servant for Cardiff. And unfortunately, the last time we're probably going to see him in the blue shirt in the Arms Park. So my God of the Week is Ray Lilo.
That's a very good start. Will, anyone of that calibre?
Right, well, I could do one to really annoy you, if you want.
Yeah, go on.
Marcus Smith.
Yeah, you're right, actually. What, that does really annoy me.
Well, I think, so, honourable mention for him, because I'll do
free,
another
it's
one.
It's a free speech.
Yeah, it is free speech. It doesn't feel like it, though, sometimes, no, when you're in the studio.
Free speech.
No, I just
anyway,
that,
thanks, Will. We'll just carry on.
The way that he dealt with a newsworthy week for him, and he's kept quiet and just played very well. And I mean, it helped that Andre Esterhazy was pretty damn good for himself outside him, but I think he did that really well. So props to him. But the one I was going to choose was a sort of, I don't know, self-publication in some ways, but I had a really nice chat last week, and we put it in Monday's Times, Tuesday's Times, with Mike Brown, the Leicester fullback, which always, when you say that now, sounds weird because he's spent so long at Quinns and everything else. But he's doing remarkably well. 37, playing for Leicester. His deal runs out at the end of the month. He's also soon to be, next week, starting a course with the Football Association. He's going to be the first non-footballer to do this particular talent ID and development course up at St George's Park. He's studying for a degree at Manchester Met Uni. He's also just had he's got a 7-week-old daughter who's just arrived. He's spending a lot of time on the M1. I made a nice chat the other day and put it in the Times on Tuesday morning, and just think all power to him. He's got good thoughts about the game and he's doing well and proving that age is just a number. So good on Mike Brown.
It's a very good one. So we've got Ray Lilo, Mike Brown. Mine's going to be a partnership or a centre who I would love to see play with Ray Lilo on Friday at Ashton Gate. Charles Pietau was on another planet. He was absolutely magnificent. And running the tricks he played, the entertainment value, it was just blissful. And I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. All those who felt I kept Will down opinion-wise, please don't write in. really appreciate it, Will, and you, Sam. I think we feel excited by what's going to be an incredible weekend. So Sam Warburton and Will Kelleher, look forward to the next time you come on. That was The Ruck.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.